Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. There's new energy in the push for more charter schools across Massachusetts. Earlier this month, three Boston area attorneys announced they're preparing to sue on the grounds that the statewide cap on the number of charters violates student civil rights by limiting their access to a high-quality education.
Then just last week came a study from Stanford University that suggested students at charter schools in Boston dramatically outperform students at traditional public schools. The six-year study found that charter students made much greater strides in math and reading than their non-charter peers.
Advocates for public schools say the data is skewed because charters educate fewer English language learners than traditional schools. And they say more charters would drain money from district schools and create a two-tiered system of public education.
So we're going to check in now on the state of this debate, and we're going to ask, is there a third way beyond the debate over charters to think about how to improve public schools in this state? In a moment, we'll hear from John Connolly, former candidate for mayor of Boston, who now heads a nonprofit dedicated to connecting families and schools. But first, we're joined by Mary Battenfield. She's an associate professor at Wheelock College and a member of Quality Education for Every Student, or QEST. And welcome to Radio Boston, Mary. Good to have you.
Welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Also joining us by phone is Julia Mejia. She's with the Massachusetts Charter Public School Association. Julia, welcome to you. It's really good to have you.
Thank you.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you where you stand on this debate. Given the Stanford University study, have you read it? Is it time to admit that charters work and lift the cap? Or do you worry that an expanded charter school movement will drain money away from traditional public schools? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Julia, I'd like to start with you, and let's start with a study out of Stanford. As an advocate of charter schools, what does the study tell you? What does it say to you?
It's exciting to know that our students are outperforming our district counterparts. I am so impressed with the level of education that our students are receiving and being more prepared to graduate and compete and go on to college. The fact that our students are getting over 223 hours of additional instruction is baffling, and it goes to show the need of our students and how oftentimes they're not prepared when they enter our schools. So oftentimes they're 2 to 3 grade levels behind, and so the intense services are needed.
Mm. Now, Julia, you graduated from Boston Public School, but now you're an advocate for charter schools. You've got a couple of nieces, a daughter in a charter school. Tell me why.
So, I mean, I won't go too much into my own personal story, but I did graduate. I was in the Boston Public School system at a time when the white flight occurred, when most of our schools were depleted of resources. And so no one ever told me about high school. I didn't, college. I did not know what an SAT was. I had countless family members who had already had dropped out and had given up on the system. I went to college only because Liz Walker shared her story at my school, inspired me to want to do more for myself. And now, you know, fast forward to this day and age, and we're still here fighting for access to quality education. And when it was time for me to consider opportunities for my daughter, I live in a low-performing district, and even the district schools are waiting lists. You have to apply and hope and pray that you get into the Murphy or to the Henderson. And so my options were very limited, and I was very fortunate that my daughter got into a charter school and changed her fate, but that's not the same for a lot of my neighbors. And then My two nieces arrived to this country in 2010 and did not speak English, and they both entered district schools. And one of them was fortunate enough to get into a charter school, and that's when I first learned about charter schools. And I saw, and she also has a learning disability, and I saw the amazing work. I felt like we were rich living in the suburbs, the type of quality that my niece was receiving. And so now she speaks better English than my nephew, who was born in this country. Meanwhile, the other sister, who did not get into a charter school until just recently, would not speak English. And so now, when she finally got in this past September, now I ask her a question in English and she replies to me in English.
All right. So, Julia, I'm going to jump in there because, okay, sounds like a good report there on your experience with charters. Mary, let me come to you. This Stanford study does seem to add fresh evidence that charters are doing a good job. What do you think is missing from the study, or what's your response to it?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say that for 15 years, I've been a proud Boston Public School parent. When my daughter first began K-1, we were admitted to the Neighborhood House Charter School as well as to Young Achievers. She eventually chose Young Achievers. In part, she does have a 504, was on an IEP eventually, and in part because of the data and people I talked to who said Young Achievers is a great school, it's an inclusion school, it will meet her learning needs. So if you're talking about the study, and again, I could sit down and talk more in detail about the data and some of the way I think there's a lot of hyperbole going on, particularly about the way this has been translated into strange days of learning time, which are not necessarily shown in the study. And we could sit down and talk about that a lot. And also, there are other studies. There are studies by in response to the 2013 Credo study out of the National Ed Policy Center in Colorado. Julian Vasquez-Helig, who is a professor in California, one of the UC system, has done a number of studies. So there's a lot of different data about that, but I really don't want to frame it, and I'm sad that...
You're saying a lot of different data, so it's not necessarily conclusive at this point.
It's not necessarily. I mean, even this Credo study shows a real glaring difference, which is that Boston has 30% English language learners, and charter schools in Boston have 8% English language learners. And I know this from a fact from when my son was at the Washington Irving School in Roslindale. We got constantly students who were coming in from the Brooks School who had been sort of counseled or pushed out, who are both special needs students and English language learners whose needs weren't being met.
Right. And I just want to be clear about that. I mean, this 8% of Boston charter school students are English language learners compared with 30% in traditional schools. The idea there that charters not teaching all kids.
Correct. Yeah. Right. And we talk.
Let Mary finish that thought, Julian. I'll let you respond
right.
in a second.
And you know, as a parent, you know, and I think we all want quality schools for our children. And I have no problem with Julia's, sense that charters have worked for her nieces or for her daughter at this point, but. To follow that up with, Boston Public Schools are terrible. Boston Public Schools do not deserve funding. Charters should be given. That doesn't follow, and that's actually harmful. And I've seen over the years how sort of the play of charters is against district schools and just the whole debate. You know,
does it necessarily have to be like that? I mean, because arguably there's a big demand for charters. I mean, across the state, 42,000 students, 18,000 of them in Boston are on a waiting list to get into one. So what's your biggest concern about allowing the charter movement to grow to accommodate these students?
That we're creating a whole system that ultimately is going to hurt the vast majority of children. It's like one way I think about it, you know, I'm a parent. I'm even right now as we're speaking, partly thinking, what am I going to have on the table for dinner? So you create when we're one district system, we're all sitting around the same table. We all have the same issues. We're working to make everybody's needs met. You have a new table over there that, for example, only serves pork. So Muslim family, you know, Muslim kids can't go there. My daughter's lactose intolerant. You got another table over there that, you know, that serves a lot of milk. Dairy products. She can't. Mm-hmm. She can't eat there. But if we're all around one table, it's both. We're pooling our resources, and we're a community. One of the wonderful things I feel about being a Boston Public School parent all these years is the parents that I sit around tables with every day. We're all very different. Right after this, I'm going to the citywide parent council meeting where I serve. We have parents from all over the city. Some of them have kids in charters as well as kids in BPS schools. We're really pulling together on this. We're not advocating for a type of school. And I do feel that that's what charter advocates do. They want their kind of schools
all
only.
Right. Let's let Julia respond to that.
Yeah. And you know what, Mary? I would love and I welcome the opportunity to join your parent council. I actually have met a few Quest folks, and I have actually I offered myself to be engaged in this dialogue because I agree with you. I mean, we're getting to a point where we're talking about each other, we're talking at each other, but we're not talking with each other. And then meanwhile, we're losing generations upon generations who are not being prepared to enter the workforce, who are not being prepared to graduate from college. I mean, when I went to school, I had to take more real courses just so that I can learn what I was what I wasn't taught in high school. But what I wanted to say is that a lot of the schools that we have, the schools that I believe your children that you mentioned are Boston Latin, which you have to take.
No, I did not mention Boston Latin School.
No, but I think I read that, and then also some of the Young Achievers is a pilot school, and some of the schools that I know that are high performing in our district schools, you have to either apply to, do an audition for, or hope and pray that you get in. So when we look at the tiers that we're creating, I do believe that we're treading really, we have to be really careful to make sure that we need to look at all systems and look at what we're going to do collectively to ensure that all children, despite their zip code, have access to high-quality education, because it's been 40-plus years, and I'm still having this conversation about what if. What if I lived somewhere else? What if I couldn't afford to send my daughter to a private school? And why do I have to even consider putting my daughter on a school bus and send shipping her off to the MECO program? Because I don't have the funding or the resources to be able to give my daughter access to the type of higher quality education.
Julia, I'm going to jump in. You made your point really well, and I want to introduce John Connolly because he's sort of going to represent a third voice in this conversation. He's a former mayoral candidate from Boston. He's the executive director of 1647, a group dedicated to connecting families and schools. And John, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony.
So you've got kids in traditional public schools, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I understand, you also believe there's a place for charter schools. But how do we get beyond the debate that we're just hearing here and that we've heard for a long time? I mean, what has to happen here?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a mind shift here to really get us past what I call the toxic debate, mm-hmm. which says that you have to make false choices. And, I mean, you can look at it in today's education debate. You can either be for no testing or too much testing, but you can't be for a couple of tests. You can either be for the union or for corporate America, but you can't say, hey, I like the union when they're right, and I want to also disagree with them when they're wrong. And then the ultimate litmus test question, you can be for charter schools or for traditional public schools, but you can't be for both. And I disagree with that. I think they're all false choices. I think this has to be about a partnership at the end of the day if we want to get out of this.
A partnership between what? Between charter schools and traditional schools?
I think
schools?
Between charters and the traditional districts. And there's one great example of the partnership. And then I think there's a couple of things we could do that would sort of break this stalemate that I think just results in everybody losing. Mm-hmm. So you look at the 2010 Achievement Gap Bill, also known as the Race to the Top. President Obama basically said through that bill, I want districts and charters to work together. And so if you want to qualify for funding, both districts and charters, and you want to get more money, and I think a lot of what we hear from folks around the district is funding. If you want more money, then you got to do two things. You got to pass a bill that's going to raise the charter cap so we can expand access to high-performing charter schools. You've got to also create more autonomy and flexibility inside the districts so that they get the tools to compete. And one other thing that happened in that 2010 bill, it mandated that charters do more for students with special needs and English language learners. I'm in complete agreement with Mary and Quest when they talk about the need to make sure that we serve all kids in all schools. But, here was a mechanism that created a partnership, and it worked. Orchard Gardens in the Boston Public Schools, the one that went on to national prominence, the Trotter School, where my two children go, is one of the worst schools in the system. Total turnaround. The Kennedy School in Jamaica Plain. That all grew out of a partnership legislation that said charters and districts ought to be working together.
It seems like this gets back to the original idea of charters, and that was sort of pilot schools that would experiment and innovate and sort of export the best ideas to district schools. Is that sort of we're sort of talking about?
Yeah,
here?
But I think we can go deeper with this partnership because, listen, I want to see charters do their fair share on serving all students too. So I think, they've got to improve on SPED and ELL and their attrition rates. But I also want to see the district do more in terms of the quality of education it offers and the autonomy that it creates within the schools, because that's really what gives the charters the flexibility to succeed. And you don't have it inside the district. And that's what ought to happen, is that we ought to pair them together so that we're sharing best practices. We're getting away from the either-ors, and we're trying to create just great schools, whether they're charters or districts.
Julia, I hear you dying to get in this conversation. I'm going to let you back in, but I just have
to follow up, and I know you wanted to get into Mary as well.
But John, just let me just ask you about this, because here's the problem that I have when I sort of try to get my arms around this debate, and I understand why, to a lot of people, it does sound like a zero-sum game. And isn't that because if the charters grow, the funding goes with the folks that go to the charter, and so it necessarily takes away from the district schools?
So let me give you one way that we could have a new creative partnership. And I'll just say, this is what I think Mayor Walsh ought to do. This is what I would have done if I were mayor. The charter schools want facilities. That's what they need more than anything. To grow up to their current cap limit, they need facilities. There are facilities in Boston, both closed schools and just other facilities that could be converted. What BPS and the city could do is they could create a long-term lease to the charters for those facilities. That would create a revenue stream back into the system. And for the first time, you could actually say charters are creating revenue for the system. You could create a side agreement to that lease that says that the charters have to conform with ELL, SPED, and attrition rates, and terminate the lease if they don't, okay? Hopefully, it doesn't have to be that sort of, you know, nasty way of doing it, but you could create a whole new vehicle that could foster more partnerships and help address some of the funding. But ultimately, on this funding piece, look, if they're in partnership and they're serving all Boston kids, then it shouldn't be that debate at the end of the day. But the district, and this is my frustration with the folks, you know, who really just, you know, attack the charters. As a Boston Public School parent, the Boston Public Schools have got to show that they can make these dollars work. Mm-hmm. I'm all for more funding, and I'm all for creating a mechanism similar to Race to the Top that brings more funding into the districts. But if the systems in the district aren't reformed, then you're just going to waste a whole lot of money. And that's the problem here. We want the money back from the charters. We don't think about how that would bring the students back from the charters, and you'd still be in the same economy of scales dilemma. And the examples of the district squandering money that never gets to the classroom are, you know, never ending.
All right. Well, Mary, let me come to you and get your response to what you heard John talking about there.
Well, John talked about Orchard Gardens. Orchard Gardens is facing an $800,000 cut this year. Those wonderful gains that they have made are in jeopardy. So, and at the same time, we're seeing Boston's share of the state Chapter 70 Foundation aid to education dropping and dropping and dropping. It's going to be 8% next year. That's down from, I think, about 30% a few years ago. And the main reason for this decline is the growth of charter schools. If you continue to fund charter schools, and back to the whole question of can we find a middle ground? Well, my state senator, Sonia Chang-Dia, has tried to find a middle ground, and charter advocates, including the Mass Public Charter School Association, totally dismissed her, and in fact were quite cruel about her. And so, you know, it's one thing to say, yes, we want to work together, but I'm hearing conflicting things. I'm hearing work together, but I'm also hearing Boston Public Schools are terrible. I'm hearing, you know, that the only good school is a charter school. I'm hearing that.
But you haven't heard that here today. But I didn't hear John say that. I mean, he's been a big champion of Boston Public Schools, right?
Yeah.
Well, I felt that underlying the criticism, particularly that Julia gave, and you know, and so, I mean, I understand you know you're an advocate for charter schools, but in the criticism I heard was a sense that Boston Public Schools are not a viable option.
Mm. Well, Julia, let me come to you just about.
Can I just add one more thing? Go ahead.
Finish.
I wish, but I don't think John, you were there, and I don't think Julia were there to see the students, the Boston Public School students, many of them from high schools like West Roxbury Academy that are labeled, you know, them, some would say are terrible schools. I wish you could have seen them come testify to the Foundation Budget Commission, testify to the school committee, talk about what their schools mean for them and how they're powerful. These are student leaders. These schools are helping them succeed regardless of what their MCAS scores are.
All right, Julia, go ahead.
I'd really like it, Julia, though,
if you could respond to sort of one of the points that John was making, this idea that there could be a middle ground, a third way, a sort of a spirit of cooperation here.
And I'm sorry because I'm Latina, so I get very passionate, and my intentions were not.
We love passion.
You know, what I wanted.
Yeah, we're all passionate about our children too.
Yeah, and so for me, Mary, I want you to know that wholeheartedly. I come from a place of collaboration. I really do believe that if you and I had an opportunity to talk. We can really work this out in terms of what it could look like for all of our children, despite the zip codes that they happen to.
Right. I do too. Although you have to admit the press releases that come from your organization are not that. But yeah,
we're getting to that point. The Boston Compact has been working really hard at creating collaboration, and so I think that what we all need to do is really look at putting our egos and our philosophies and our pride and this, that to the side and look at the children and what it's going to take for all of us to work together to make that happen. And I think that if we don't start having this conversation now, we're going to lose another entire generation because we keep talking about each other and not with each other. And I do believe that there's a lot of power in working together. And there's lots of best practices that if the district schools wanted to implement that don't really cost a lot of money, like planting the seeds of going to college, putting flags up from all the universities, that doesn't cost money. Enforcing, you know.
Right, Julie, if I could just point out, though, that there was a recent study done that actually shows that Boston Public School graduates do better than charter school graduates at college completion. So, I'm just saying it's a complicated thing.
Yeah, no, I think that data also included the exam schools. And so
Wait a minute. I'm going to jump in here because if we start getting bogged down in data and studies and competing studies, we're not going to really help the listeners that much. Speaking of which, we've got a bunch of listeners who'd like to get in this conversation. I want to give them a chance. So let's go to Kayla, who's calling from Hyde Park. Kayla, you're on the air. Is Kayla
there? Yes, good afternoon. Yeah. My name is Taylor Andre. I'm calling from Hyde Park. I am a parent of a charter school child. I actually have two children. My son started off in Boston Public School, and I noticed that schools that are located in Jamaica Plain or West Roxbury, but we're not mentioning these schools that are in Roxbury, these schools that are in Dorchester, these schools that are in Mattapan. There are schools that are failing, and they are failing tremendously. We have level 4 schools throughout the entire city. No one's talking. Level 4, that's a D. How did we come to this point where it's acceptable for our children to attend a level 4 school? That's unacceptable. One of the things that the gentleman said earlier is what is the third option? Is there a third option? Yes, there is. Take away the funding from, say, you don't have enough taxes in this district. What about the curriculum? What about what the children learn in those books? There's children overseas that don't have a $1 billion budget, but still outperform us in math, English, science. There's no reason why we can't take what's in those books and cookie cut our entire system to learn what Weston's learning, to learn what Newton's learning. And I commend Sonia Chang Diaz. Thank you. She's my senator.
Kayla, I'm going to jump in, and we hear your passion. And the gentleman you were mentioning here in the studio is John Connolly. John, I'd love you to respond to what Kayla's talking about.
Yeah, well, let me just start with the funding piece, if that is what it all boils down to. You know, one of the pieces on the way we fund schools is called foundation budgeting. It grew out of the 93 Ed Reform Act, and, you know, it was set up with the best of intentions, and it's come up short. One of the main reasons it's come up short is that it didn't take into account what pension costs would do to trying to fund districts. Nobody wants to talk about that because it's a political third rail. But it becomes easy to blame charter schools for taking money out of the district, but we're not talking about the number one reason that foundation budgeting isn't working. Let me just bring a second piece into this. 2010, the last time we really got honest numbers from the district on empty seats in our schools and how much those cost, $25 million a year on just burning on schools that aren't properly enrolled in BPS. Nobody wants to talk about that. And when we don't want to have an honest discussion as Boston Public School parents about what we've got to do to get our fiscal house in order, it becomes really easy to blame charter schools for taking all of the money. But again, I think that if we actually get families talking to each other and in the room together and talking, if we listen to charter school families about why they don't choose BPS, if we listen to Mary about why BPS is better than a lot of the public perception may say, we might actually be able to have a real dialogue that could, again, get us to a better place. But the road we're on right now is just a disastrous road for everybody.
Yep. Let's go to Judy, who's calling from Brockton. Judy, you're on the air. I understand you're a teacher. teacher. I'd love to hear your perspective here.
Thank you. Yeah, well, my perspective, I've taught in both charter schools and public schools, and I guess the only difference I've seen in both systems is the size of the classroom. I have 35 students right now in my public school classes, whereas I had under 20 in my charter school, and that makes all the difference in the world. And if we were talking about the same size classroom, we'd be talking about the same level of learning.
Judy, your line is really, really tough, but we took away what you said, that you've taught both in public and charter schools. The main difference is class size. Public schools had, the charters had much smaller classes than the charter schools. Is that a fair point that Judy's making?
Yes. I mean, if you look, for example, at the population of Academy of the Pacific Rim, it loses, like, I think between 9th and 12th grade, it loses like 60% of its students through attrition. I think it had a graduating class of like 29. So, yeah, they're smaller classes. And we all know that smaller class sizes are important to student learning. Back to this larger point about the dialogue and bringing people together. Again, it is something we all feel passionately about. I often think that I'm a very moderate person, except when it comes to my Boston sports teams and my children and the children of this city. And I do look at those kids. John, you talk about the empty classrooms. But if you had heard those students at the Rogers Middle School, there was a student, a refugee from Liberia, who said, "This school is my family." And her right to attend a school that is meeting her needs should not be determined based on the fact that her school doesn't have enough people. It shouldn't be dollars and cents. It should be a way to, and again, I agree. The larger problem all this is that we are not equitably funding urban schools of all kinds. My daughter attended school in Metco, in our governor's stomping ground, Swampscott. And the difference between the high school, Swampscott High School, and Boston Arts Academy, their building, their facilities, it just makes me cry to think about it. And that's not fair. And, I think that where we really need to come around is equity. And I am fully supportive of having conversations with more parents about charter schools and charter advocates. But you've got to think about where, I like the phrase strong at the broken places. I think Boston Public Schools is strong at the broken places in the sense that they really are, I believe, quite brave about looking at some of the problems. Mayor Walsh, when a new study came out about lack of achievement of Black and Latino boys, he said, "I own this. I want charter schools to own their attrition rates. I want them to own their huge suspension rates. I want them to own this, and then we can start having dialogue."
All right. Well, the dialogue, we'd like to think, if it didn't start here, at least it continued here with a lot of passion. Mary Battenfield is an associate professor at Wheelock College and a member of Quality Education for Every Student. Thank you, Mary, for coming in. And Julia Mejia is the director of Family and Community Engagement at the Massachusetts Charter Public School Association. Julia, thank you. We'll continue this discussion in the months ahead, I promise.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And John Connolly, executive director of 1647, a group dedicated to connecting families and schools. John, thank you for coming in and trying to talk about a middle ground here. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.